Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It's episode number 93 for Thursday, April 12th, 2012. Man, we're getting close to 100. So I'm Phil Nickinson. I'm your host for the show and editor of AndroidCentral.com. And I want to reminisce for a second, because I still remember long before I was ever doing podcasts, I remember the Cell Phone Junkie hitting 100 episodes. And I remember all these people coming on, including Dieter Bohne, our former boss and compatriot. And I think he was the only one who I knew on there. Maybe I think Matt Miller might have done something. I don't remember. But Mickey, I bring that up because you're back with us. Mickey Paplon from Cell Phone Junkie. He is the Cell Phone Junkie, actually. I don't know. Does Joey would Joey dispute that?
No, I don't think Joey would. It's interesting. We're talking about coming up on 100 episodes, and you think about just it was just about 2 years ago we started this thing, and it's come a long way, and it's amazing to see. I was just thinking about it today, and how many devices have come out each and every week, and just how much there is to talk about, and how great that not only the site but this show has become, and really it's all because of the followers and the fans and everyone who listens to and works on the site, every day. I mean, it's amazing to see how much this community has grown, and it's awesome to be a part of it. So yes, thank you. I'm glad to be back.
Woohoo! Also with. Jerry Hildenbrand from the site.
So Mickey gets that wonderful introduction and a welcome, and I get Jerry Hildenbrand from the site.
You're lucky I got that far.
Okay. Hi, everybody.
And from the Android Central forums, the greatest forums on Android Central. Also the only forums. And anyway, Corey Streeter.
They are the only forums.
Yeah, actually they are. How you doing, everybody? Corey? You've been gone for a little while, too.
I have been traveling. It's good to be home.
They not have razors where you were?
No, I actually saw one today.
If you're not watching the video, you're missing out here, because Corey looks like he's been in the wilds of, I don't know, Minnesota or something. Wait, that's Mickey's stomping
ground. Oh, that kind of razor. I thought you were talking about the phone.
No, not the phone. Sigh. So we got most of the crew back together. We're missing Alex Dobie. He'll be back hopefully next time. We shall see. So, I don't know. What's going on? I kind of don't want to, totally rehash HTC stuff because, frankly, I'm not getting sick of it, but damned if we haven't talked about it a lot. But I do want to hear Mickey's thoughts on this because Jerry and I have been talking 1X, 1S just nonstop. Mickey, have you gotten to play with any of them, or have you just had to be watching from afar so far?
Nah, unfortunately, I've had to watch, I think both of these options, and it really depends on what you're looking for out of your device, are just awesome. And it's hard. You're hard pressed to find yourself in April, where we don't have a big device launch. I mean, you look at 2 years ago with the Evo 4G, and of course, we had the 4G LTE that we just, of course, are going to probably maybe talk about. Whatever, and I look at that and I still think it's a big device, but it's still probably the better of the two options. Yet something about it, that 1S, I mean, it's probably the form factor, is just really kind of captivated me. And I can't wait to actually get a chance to get my hands on one or both of them and play with them, because I'm at a point right now where, from everything that you've written and some of the other reviews that I read, it sounds like the new Sense is really not the Sense that I know and hate. And that's what's, I think, the most exciting thing for me. And, the fact that this could also be what Android is needed to get ICS really going. I mean, we're 6 months in now, right? I mean, we've had the Galaxy Nexus that was announced in October. Mm-hmm. And we've got nothing really to show for it as far as new hardware is concerned. And this is really, I think, the first one that's going to get it going. So either way, Sprint's got their variant, and T-Mobile, I think, is going to have their variant here very soon with their events coming up here in just a couple weeks. Or next week maybe.
Yeah,
so,
next Wednesday.
Yeah, I do think both of them are great. I know you guys already talked about it quite a bit. So either one I think is a good option. And if you're not interested in Samsung hardware, which I know a lot of people kind of are not the biggest fans of, then these are probably great options. And I think either one, and it just, depends on what you want, what your form factor preference is.
I was thinking about it today because it took a while. Somebody finally accused us of being sponsored by HTC. And I was thinking back to last year when it was all, how much is Samsung paying you guys for all this coverage? It's like, they're putting out 5 million phones. What do you want us to do? not my fault. It's nice having somebody else to work with. But I tell you, I am looking forward to getting our hands on, you know, some new Samsung and Motorola. So it's easy. It's only been 3 months since CES, but it's easy to forget that we have Motorola with Intel hardware coming at some point this year.
Sometime. Maybe.
When?
Don't know when. Well, this fall. Probably, you know, I think October, November.
Didn't the one for China already go or going next month?
Something. It's coming sooner rather than later.
So, they'll have that test model out there and get it all sorted when we get ours, I hope.
Yeah, and then we can all just sit around and be like, hey, look, it's an Android phone with different stuff inside.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It'll happen.
Hey, well, that's the thing. If it's done right, it'll be just another Android phone from Motorola. We should never know what's inside it.
Yeah, exactly. So we've got the T-Mobile event next week. I mean, it's not like we don't know what's coming, right? We've seen the 1S. We've used the 1S. I've got a 1S here somewhere. Where'd it go? Here it is. Yeah, so for all intents and purposes, I think we're expecting the same thing. Well, I guess Andrew Vaca is going to go in New York, and we will find out from him. So we will see. So I don't know, not a whole lot else to say about that. We've got some really, really good discussions going on in the forums, though. A whole lot of people who either love the look of the Evo 4G LTE or hate the look of it, and it's just been some really good back and forth, and it's nice to see. So if you haven't been in the forums with us, you're missing out, because I've been spending a lot of time in there over the past week.
Check out that battery cover conversation.
Yes, it's insane. It's great, though. I got to spend more time in the forums. I really am enjoying it. I've been making everybody else write all these blog posts so I can play in the forums. It's nice. You want to talk other new stuff? So Toshiba announced a few new tablets this week, a 7.7 inch, a 10.1 inch, and a friggin' 13.3 inch tablet. It's a little insane.
Yeah. The Toshiba Book Air. That just makes me think of that. It's a bit much.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to play with them yet. Well, I've used the 10, I guess. No, and I have seen the 7, so I've used everything but the 13. So the 7 we saw in Barcelona, in fact, I think I linked to that video out of it. We'll have links in the show notes. The 10 we've seen before at CES. I think it's been tweaked maybe a little bit, and the 10 was sexy as hell. So was the 7. But they've really gotten just slim and thin and really nice. But 13 inches for a tablet, just on principle.
Yeah. Well, it's...
The face I'm making isn't translating well in audio, but... that's the sound my face is making.
Well, it's got a good keyboard.
13.3, I'll shut up. Go ahead.
All I was going to say is, if it's got a nice keyboard and somebody wants to give up their laptop and use that, it's not a bad option.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking.
I'm kind of in the other camp. I think we actually... I think bigger is actually a better way to go on tablets, and I was totally in that camp where I'm like, that's really big to see that, but Joey has kind of got me swayed in the other direction where this form factor, whether it's the iPad or the Galaxy line at the 10 inch mark, it's nice, but give me something bigger. I mean, we've got laptops that are 13, 15, 17 inches. And I don't see any reason why we can't do it with the tablet as well. You're going to be, if you're carrying something around that's bigger than something that you can put in your pocket, what's the difference if it's 10 inches or 13 inches? And I would argue that if you can get more screen real estate to do more things that you want to do on it, I'm all for it. And I would love to see something bigger.
Yeah. Got to have a good keyboard, though.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm going to have to disagree.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I love the Transformer Prime for what it is. But to me, that's the limit of something I'm going to carry and not be able to actually work from. I just bought a new Ultrabook, and it's another 1.3 pounds, and it'll do everything I want it to do. It's not limited, like an Android or an iPad tablet. Now, I see the draw. I see why, like Mickey says, people would want that more real estate. But to me, before I'd carry a 17-inch tablet, I'd carry a 17-inch laptop.
Yes.
But I'm old and don't agree with a lot of things, so maybe I'm wrong.
You know what's interesting for me, and this has changed in the last couple of months. When I got LTE in my latest tablet, yes, an iPad, when I got LTE built into that, it totally changed the way that I use it. Mm-hmm. And it has put my laptop on a shelf almost. It's just something where I'm either using a desktop or I'm using the tablet because it's that portable and it's that accessible. And yeah, I know you can say, well, yeah, well, I can tether it to my phone. It's totally different. I'm telling you, it's totally different when you don't have to think about that. And, you know, because that one small hurdle that you have to leap over, which is going into the phone and turning on the tethering, is something you don't even bother to do, because as soon as you pull out the phone, you just deal with it on the phone. And it's so much more useful to do it on a tablet. So I would argue that if we are talking about a bigger tablet, it's going to be even more compelling if you do it and you have it, if you have some sort of connectivity built into it. Cause I really think like I said, it changed the way that I view how I'm using a tablet. And I'm kind of excited about that, cause it feels like my mobility usage is changing a little bit because of that. And I'm enjoying it.
I wrote a couple weeks ago that I wasn't planning on getting an iPad 3 cause we already had an iPad 2 here. I guess I should call it an iPad 3 cause it's not its name, but whatever, I'm calling it that. And of course, we went out and got one. Well, the company got one because, you know, I got to be able to really compare it to, you know, real Android tablets that come through. And so here's my iPad, my new iPad, my iPad 3, my just plain iPad review. Heavier, although supposedly it's not. It feels heavier.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
It is.
A little bit thicker, and I can tell the difference, and especially, mm-hmm. you know, in just going back and forth, I can tell, especially going from an Android tablet that's just thinner. I mean, it's really noticeable. The display, really nice, really nice. I think it shocked me more when I first saw it, but especially when you use it side by side, it's just not, you know, it's not as stark as I thought it might be, the difference. There's still a lot of room, I think, for Android tablets here. You know, Asus is still, I think, the cream of the crop. Samsung has some new ones coming out. And it's a little odd the way they're doing it. And I'm going to speak out of school a little bit, but I think they've kind of shifted away from Samsung Mobile for some of these tablets and are doing it more from the electronic side. And I'm not sure if that's a really just a behind-the-scenes thing, and I shouldn't read too much into it or not. I'll have one or two of them here tomorrow. I'm not sure which ones. But I still go back to kind of what I said about the Zyborg, the Zoom 2 earlier in the year. It's like, all right, we're iterating the hardware a little bit, but I'm not sure we've changed the usage cases any. And Asus is still the only one that's really done that. And look, Samsung's just being a little ridiculous with having a 7-inch, a 7.7-inch. They have an 8-inch one, 8.1? 8.8? I don't remember. I can't even keep track of it. Yeah, there are so many damn Samsung tablets. It's ridiculous. Right? And then we still have the possibility of a Google one coming out at, you know, I would assume at I/O. That's what I'm predicting. And I think it'll be better because it will have a usage case behind it, and it's not just a tablet for tablet's sake. So I don't know. It's a weird time for tablets. I still haven't quite figured it out. And I was using the Kindle Fire again for a little while, and it's still not perfect. I think it's still good enough for the price. Kind of where I'm at on tablets.
Well, you start looking at devices like the ZenBook, the mm-hmm. Asus ZenBook, and you can do, you know, they have the full Windows platform on them, or, you know, if you're into, I guess, God forbid, you know, Apple, then you can get the Air, and it has the full. So it just seems kind of weird to go to a tablet that has reduced functionality. It's the same size and quality and all that. But,
right.
I don't know. The ZenBook looks awesome.
Yeah.
It does everything.
Is that the one you got? Because you just got one too, right?
I'm waiting for the 31A to come out. Okay. It's like the successor. But yeah, that's what I'm eyeing.
And I still very much like using tablets. I really do. And I use Android tablets and I use the iPad here. I think nothing is still as smooth as the iPad. I think UI on a display that big, it needs to be, you know, it needs to be flawless, and iOS has that, and Android's just not quite there yet. It's really odd. I'm trying to figure out why I hate the iOS UI on phones. It just bores me to tears on the iPhone, but on a tablet, it makes a little more sense to me, and it doesn't bother me as much, and I'm not sure why.
Well, it's because it was really designed for a tablet, and then they scaled it down to work on a phone.
Right.
I think that's the easiest way to put it. I mean, it's it's something that when they released the device, you know, when they released their first device with iOS, they did it on a phone because they know that was going to reach the critical mass and that a tablet wasn't quite ready for it at that point. But Jobs knew there was a reason, you know, to have this and to have it on a tablet. And you're absolutely right. I think my perfect combo is an Android phone and an iPad tablet, honestly. Mm-hmm. Now, I struggle with it because I go back and forth, and there's I get tied into that iOS ecosystem, and every time I try and break away from it, there's something about one thing or another that really kind of gets me. But man, you know, their Ice Cream Sandwich is the first great version of Android that is, it totally goes head to head with iOS, and it's as we're seeing some of these great new hardware designs come out, you couple that with this, the great ICS software, and it's I mean, it makes it a really compelling decision, I think, for someone to go with. There's almost no reason. You know, it used to be, well, I want, you know, one thing or another with Android, but now it's like, you know, there's with Instagram now, and I don't know if we want to talk about that at all too, but
sure.
Boy, I think that was, that's you know, that coming to Android and then getting bought by Facebook. I think for a lot of people, that was one of the last, like, hey, I can't get this app that I really want on Android type of things to fall. And now that it's there, you're good.
We talked a little bit about it last week, I think, didn't we, Jerry? And how really it's just kind of, I mean, for me, it's been an unimpressive app. I'm not even using it because, who was I talking to? I was talking to somebody about it today. I've got this beautiful, I don't even know where I put it. It's over there charging. All right, so I have this beautiful phone. or I have this beautiful phone. Or this one's not bad. We have these beautiful phones with beautiful displays and these big widescreen 16:9 displays and high resolution and great cameras. I don't want to dumb it down. I don't want to go to a 1:1 resolution. I don't want filters. I want big, beautiful pictures the way they were meant to be taken. If you haven't seen the kind of point counterpoint that Dieter and Chris did of The Verge, it was a lot of fun. And it's more fun when you know these guys. But it was a good back and forth. And, I mean, both points are valid, right? I think it comes down to taste. But for me, I want to show you big, beautiful pictures. Period. If you want to take them and, you know, crop them and put filters on them, be my guest, but these are my pictures. Well, and this is how I'm going
to
take them.
But that's the thing is you have to realize that is what people are interested in doing right now, and we got to stop by saying, you know, it's you know, it's just a fad, or it's for hipsters or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's over 30 million people that are interested in this platform and in doing this, I should say, and right. The fact that we've got all these, you know, pictures that are now out there with these filters on and stuff like that. It's just a fun way to express your pictures. You don't have to use it, but when you want to do something fun to a picture, whatever, you know, it's a thing. Just do it. It's, you know, think of it as, you know, just another way of sharing a moment in a very different way. You know, if you want to take full res pictures and use your full res pictures, that's good. But most of the people that are using this for are like kind of, I don't know. It's a different thing than just taking a picture and sharing a picture, because I'm guessing you don't do that as much. And when you start to play with Instagram a little bit, you kind of get it. You realize what's happening. I mean, I took a piece of key lime pie that I ate on Pie Day. Yes, because I'm that nerdy. And I applied an Instagram filter to it because I thought it was cool, because it took and it totally accentuated the vibrant greens of the key lime pie, something that the actual picture didn't do. And it just did something different to the picture. And I thought it was fun to share that. And that's where this is coming from. People are taking this too seriously, you know? So, yes, whatever. You're ruining the picture. Fine. But you know what? You're sharing that.
I was going to say you're ruining the pie, but.
Wow. That's awesome.
stopped being fun when they stopped fighting. So I just gave up.
That's true, too.
that part was fun. That was, I had a couple days of pure enjoyment watching people be idiots. That was fun.
That's actually what we do for a living.
But
when you think about it, I mean, in one form or another. Speaking of which, here's a segue. I want Jerry to talk about the latest scary security thing. So some researchers came out and said, here are three big giant loopholes in Android that you need to be, well, actually they didn't say you need to be afraid about it. The blogs picked it up. I say the blogs like we're not one, but who's typing? Who's typing?
Jerry.
Not me.
Jerry. So blogs started picking it up, and that's when it became three scary loopholes that you need to worry about in Android, but that's not quite right. Sort of, right, Jerry?
Yeah, it's... I mean, is it something that needs to be talked about? Sure.
So let's talk about what they did. It was actually kind of an interesting little experiment. So Android applications, we talk about this all the time, they have to declare permissions when you install them and say, all right, hey, I want to be able to write to the SD card. I want to be able to get online. I want to be able to use your contacts so I can help you call somebody or email somebody. Mm-hmm. That all makes sense. So these guys said, well, let's see what we can do if we don't declare any permissions. A permissionless app that should, for all intents and purposes, be benign. So what all can this app get into?
And in the end, it was. That's the first thing I want to say.
Right.
It was benign. It didn't – there's – anywhere you read about alarms or, you know, security hole or big problems, that's just people sensationalizing. Mm-hmm. But it was able to do three things. One of them surprised me. Some people were surprised about all three. With no permissions, you install this app and it doesn't have any listed permissions, it could still read data from the SD card. Well, I think just about everything can read data from the SD card. And as long as we're going to keep having SD cards that you can take out and plug into your Windows computer, that's the way it's going to be. I mean, that's just it. That was by design. That's not a flaw. That's not a mistake. Maybe it's not the best way to do it, and we don't have to like it, but that's not a security hole. It's just the way it is. It could read from the proc file system. That's a – it's a Linux thing. It's not a real file system. When you boot your computer, it's like a window to the kernel where, you know, keep the – applications and, you know, user interface can communicate with the kernel, and it just writes stuff there that's erased when it needs to be erased or when you shut it off. Really mundane things like your kernel version, mm-hmm. or how much free RAM you have, or how much battery life you have.
Gosh, Jerry, I don't want somebody to know that. That's personal stuff.
Well, you know, it's... There's nothing there. If somebody really, really wanted to, mm-hmm. they could study that and find a way maybe to try another exploit. You know, like somebody in the chat said network buffer size. That's exactly what I was thinking. I could read proc and I could see, well, you know, let's try to brute force this, overrun their browser, make it crash. I could do really useless, simple crap. It's not – nobody's going to be able to steal your phone because it can read that.
Hey, note to self before you get to the third thing. Don't give Mickey such a hard time next time he nerds out on Spectrum after that one.
Seriously.
I'm sorry. Yeah. You have to try to explain it.
I'm kidding. All right, so thing number three.
The thing number three, it can read a list of all the applications that you have installed on your phone. And that's not really a security risk, but it would tell me if I was trying to attack your phone that – and they use Skype as an example. Skype has been fixed. It wasn't fair to single out Skype, but that's what they did.
Yeah, so they said, hey, we can see that you have Skype in your phone. Skype had this known vulnerability. Therefore, we could use that to get into your phone. But you're absolutely right. That vulnerability was fixed in like within a week, I think.
So it's, you know, it's not there was no serious security holes whatsoever there. There's nothing to really worry about. It's things that make sense, even if we don't completely understand it, you know, why they had to be done that way. I'm not sure why it would need to read a list of all the applications, why that list would need to be public, but that didn't happen on accident. It was marked as readable. So there is a reason for it, and it's not that important.
So at the end of the day, we don't need to be freaking out about this. I mean, it's interesting, and you and I were talking about this the other night. I mean, it's an interesting read, but I'm not going to, like, stay up nights worrying about it.
Right. I love reading that kind of stuff. But to be honest, I wouldn't have said anything if some other people weren't saying the sky is falling.
Right.
When people do that, I just feel like, okay, let's – you know, there's another side to this. The sky isn't falling. Let's break it down. And that's what I like to try to do.
And that's what I asked you to do. And you did it very well.
Yep. Well, thank you. I tried.
Anybody else worried? Mickey, Corey, you worried? You cool?
No, not at all.
All right. Cool.
You should be
no
know what
after in this world. Impossible.
Exactly.
There's lots of drama, though, and that's kind of what they did with this.
Well, and speaking of which, let's debunk some other stuff. I think CNET UK did a video showing, if you, I don't have the 1X with me, it's over on the other side of the room, but if you twist it and push on the sides, it'll like distort the display. That is the biggest BS video I've seen in a long time. I mean, yes, it will absolutely do that. Here's how you avoid it. Don't twist the phone and push on the display. Jeez. It's not something you would ever do in normal use of the phone. Maybe, no. I mean, you wouldn't. Just, no. It's ridiculous. It's irresponsible reporting. It's all that was. And next thing you hear is, it's a design flaw, say people who have no idea about design. And you know what? That includes me, but I do know how people use phones. And I do know that's not how you use this phone. I've been using it for 3 weeks now. God, it pissed me off.
Everybody watching this on a computer, put your finger on the screen and push.
Right. See what happens.
Same damn thing.
Exactly same thing. And there's no way in normal use of the phone it should do that. If it does, if you're sitting there and you just push on the phone like you normally would with your finger, and it does do that, take it back. There's something wrong with it. If you're twisting your phone and pushing on the edges, and yeah, it's going to happen, and that's on you. That, I mean, it's not a design flaw. It's not a manufacturing defect. Now, the one I'm not quite as sure about is, and this one I do have the phone in front of me, is the microarc oxidation. We keep calling it a coating. It's not actually coating. It's not something on top of the metal here. It's a treatment to the metal that turns it into this weird textured thing. And it still feels really good, and I like it a lot. So some people are saying it's actually chipped on the front of the 1S. Here's my thing on stories like this. And we often get accused of not setting our hair on fire over these. In any manufacturing run, you're going to have defects. It happens, right? I mean, 100% is just impossible, even for something like Apple. You know, right? 100%, and they're probably as close to 100% as anybody. But, you know, even the iPhone, you're going to have iPhones with the occasional cosmetic defect or manufacturing flaw or something. That happens. So, even, you know, forums have a tendency to magnify this sort of thing. So when I see one phone, you know, say, oh, it's chipping off. Or if I see, you know, two or, you know what, maybe even five. I'm not sure that's representative of an entire production line. I'd actually be really curious. And I wonder if we could ever get a manufacturer to tell us, like, at what point, what is the magic number? You know, how many reports do they have to get for it to be statistically significant for them to actually be like, all right, you know what, we need to take a look at this. So the thing is, supposedly, you know, the paint's been chipping off for something. I've been using this as my daily driver because it doesn't have, you know, T-Mo 3G or AT&T 3G. So I haven't been running around with it in my pocket. So I'm not going to necessarily weigh in on the validity of that, but I am going to say that when you get reports of something like that happening, I think it's good to sit back and just kind of watch it for a little bit. You know, some things are obvious, some aren't. I've got this Thunderbolt here, and the Thunderbolt fell apart, you know, after 2-3 months. You know, it didn't do it right away. Looked fine for a little while, and then it just looks like crap now. So, I don't know. So, when we talk about manufacturing flaws, A, I'm not a materials engineer. I'm not an engineer of any kind. So, I'm not going to, you know, really talk to design flaws. Now, if there's a usability flaw or usability issue, you know, I think we can talk to that. We all use these phones. We can give our opinions on that. But I'm not going to say that the MAO coating, because A, it's not a coating, that I'm pretty sure of. I'm not going to say the treatment's flawed or the process under which it was designed or produced was. All right, the chat room's cracking me up with the Thunderbolt tonight. They keep talking about which is better, the Thunderbolt or the North Korean missile launch tonight. It's killing me.
Don't do that. I haven't sold mine yet.
You haven't sold your North Korean missile yet? No. Dude, you're close enough in Seattle. You might be able to see that thing. Do you see Russia from your house?
Why, no. Yes, I can.
Oh, Jerry almost lost it. I saw that. It's so great doing this on video now. So that's my thing on the manufacturing flaws and defects. Those are very sexy words that you'll hear, and you need to, you know, take a deep breath. Hey, you know what phone is still holding up like a champ, by the way? My Nexus One. Just saying.
Dude, I'm using mine again.
Are you?
It's the best phone they ever put out.
It really is.
Manufactured very well.
I like a lot of phones, but it is the best phone ever made. Sorry, guys.
The Infuse is still holding up really well for me. I mean, I've got a few scratches on it, I guess, but we took it back to Spain in February. Hey, speaking of the Infuse, you know what finally happened? Finally, after 2 months, it finally got its gingerbread update again. So damned if it's not running official. Ooh, it's still charged too. Check this out. Official gingerbread. How about that?
Oh my God.
You ever think we'd be excited about that?
Crazy.
I had to update via keys, and actually somebody emailed in. I don't think I put it in the show. Somebody emailed in, I guess last week we were talking about how you don't need to use a computer ever for an Android phone, and they're right. That's not always true. With Samsung phones, sometimes you need keys, that horrible, horrible desktop app to update, and that's what I had to use for this. They didn't push it out over the air. God, I hate keys. I mean, it works fine.
It's the key word.
Right. Well, it's keys many.
Update.
When you say that, because what phone was it that I had? There was one of the phones I had Samsung keys, and you could access your music and drag folders.
So that, right.
That worked really well.
Yeah, no. That was the full keys. So they've kind of backed off that, at least on the US phones, I think. We have keys mini, which is a lot lighter weight, which is good. No, I understood what keys was for. It's just not necessary, especially now that phones are starting to move to MTP. And I don't think we've talked about this, speaking of nerding out. So it's been a while since we had Jerry explain to us what MTP is, but I think the short version is, so older phones, you plug it in, you have to change it to like disk drive mode, right? So then you can move files back and forth on your computer. But the phone, half of the phone quits working, basically. You know, anything on the SD card is no longer visible to the phone. And that's bad, you know, for apps that are installed. God forbid you install a widget to the phone. It's really going to screw things up. So MTP solved that, among other things. But this is the only one I care about. So you plug your phone into the computer. The computer can see the phone. The phone can still do everything it did before, and everybody's happy. And for the way I take screenshots, it made life really easy, which is the real reason I'm complaining about this. But the new HTC phones aren't using MTP. They're using the old school whatever mode method that is. Wrong. Exactly.
UMS. Just now you know the rest of the story.
Okay. So actually that bugs me, and it bugs me probably a little more than it should. A lot, actually. I think it has to do with the HTC program they use? It's the HTC Sync or whatever it is.
HTC Sync, I think it's called.
Yeah. I'm willing to bet that's why.
My God, throw away all the cables and all those protocols and just get Wi-Fi Explorer. It works so well.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah.
There you go.
Jerry actually turned me on to that. Type in your, you know, you open it up, shows you an IP address, you type it into your browser, and boom, you have full access to your phone.
All right. I'm going to try that tonight.
Yeah.
I should. On the other hand, that helps me charge.
I am a little bit concerned that HTC didn't go with MTP. I hate MTP because I run Linux on my desktop,
right.
And MTP and Linux is a total bitch to make play together nice.
You're biased.
But yes, I am biased. That's just wanted to be upfront with that.
No, you're not biased. You're biased. Get it right.
Okay, bias. Thank you.
You got to say it wrong like everybody else does.
Okay, grammar girl.
But we just finished talking about and I'll use air quotes in case you're not watching, security issue that has to do with USB mass storage in the SD card. HTC still making phones that have this issue. You know, with Samsung, at least on the you know, the Galaxy Nexus is the only new phone they've shipped with, you know, with Ice Cream Sandwich. It doesn't have it. None of the tablets they fooled around with trying to make mass storage work. And while people like me who have, you know, used Linux aren't going to like it much, MTP does take that one security issue, air quotes, out of the picture, and HTC decided not to go with it.
So there's that. And I would still like to take screenshots easier. Just saying.
All right, I'll shut up. I'm done.
No, you're not.
Probably not, but I have to say it just to make you happy.
What else we want to talk about? $30 upgrade fee on Verizon goes into effect April 22nd.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
Nothing new there, by the way.
Sasha Sagan did a good post on that today on why it's actually a good thing. Anybody guess why? Anybody read it?
It'll keep people from jerking Verizon around and driving the cost of phones up higher. Is that why? Because I didn't read it.
No, Sasha's point, and I think it was a good one, is that Verizon knows people are going to pay for their service because it's a good service. And if they can squeeze another $30 out of you, that means they're really confident in their product. And you know what? That's a damn good point. You have, you know, we were talking earlier about how, you know, great LTE is on the iPad now. And what network is that on?
Verizon.
You know, what network have, you know, what network was the first, you know, 4G phone on? Not first, but the first LTE phone on, you know, Android on Verizon. And so I get what he was saying, and it actually makes sense. Now, it's also not like Verizon's the first one to come up with these upgrade fees when you go in to upgrade your phone. And they say, all right, well, you know, you got to pay $30 to do it. And you're going to say yes, first off. It's not like it's some exorbitant amount of money. And, you know, well, you know, for $99, $200, we're going to give you a new phone early, whatever. Oh, you know, extra $30 to do it. Fine. Just do it. You're going to do it. Let's not pretend otherwise.
Well, yeah, you're going to, because you're going to on AT&T and you're going to on Sprint.
Right.
And you're going to on T-Mobile and U.S. Cellular. You're going to do it.
In fact, it's cheaper than Sprint. Sprint's is, or AT&T's is $36.
Yep.
So everybody's kind of freaking out about that. It makes sense. In fact, it
all starts to add up, though. I mean, in Washington, we pay like 30% taxes on our phone bills. So
that was another one of Sasha's points. If you want to get really mad, get mad about that stuff. Get mad about all the nickel and diming that goes on your bills. And that's tough. And I don't disagree. And I live in Florida where we, you know, do everything weird. Lots of stuff weird.
You have to pay to play, and there is a way out. You could go buy an AT&T SIM card and pay outright for a phone and stick the SIM card in. It's not like anybody's holding a gun to your head forcing you to pay these carriers for the upgrade fees.
Yep.
If you have $1,000 laying around.
Well, I mean, if it's a matter of principle, I don't want to pay the fee out of principle.
But here's the other thing. In fact, Alex and I were talking about this because I think he sold his Galaxy Note and got another phone. I'm not going to say what it is. 1X or 1S. I forget which one. But I mean, this goes back to something Mickey's talked about a lot, and Mickey does a lot of it, is, you know, buying and selling phones. And, you know, you take a 20% loss or whatever it is, you know, but then, you know, you still only paid at the end of the day, you only paid like $200 for the new phone, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's, you know, you got to have the money up front, but it's not like you're paying $1,000 every time, hopefully.
And you know, you have to think about it this way too. And this is kind of how I view it all the time, is I've got this like little pot of money that sits there as the phone money, right? And once you've thrown out $500, $600, $700, if you buy a Galaxy Nexus early, you've now invested that money. And when you go to sell the phone, you may get, let's just say $100 less than that. But then you still have that $600 sitting there in the case of the Nexus. And then you can reinvest that into another unlocked phone. And as long as you're doing it in a very quick fashion, and this is what you have to realize, if you buy and sell every 2 to 3 months like I do, then you're losing a little bit of money each time, but you're still kind of using that amount that you have over and over and over. And sure, you're losing a little bit, but what would you rather do? Would you rather sign a new contract and have like 12 lines sitting out there, or just spend the extra money up front and lose $100 every time you decide to get a new phone? And yeah, I know it's not a viable option for everybody, but if you really want to be on top of you know, the latest and greatest that's out there. It's an easy way to do it. It's really not all that bad.
That's how I do
it. If you do it, yeah. I have two Fascinates and a Thunderbolt sitting in my drawer.
Why? What are you hanging on to those for? Sell them.
And an extra Galaxy Nexus. I'm too lazy. I hate dealing with eBay. And
what do you mean you're too lazy?
Come on. You got to take the pictures and post the ad. And deal
Corey has to roll out of his bed made of money and walk across his gold floor.
No.
Turn the crystal knob on his all Gorilla Glass door. Leave the condo.
Gorilla Glass. No.
Life's rough in Seattle.
I just don't buy food and I don't have kids.
I think about how much fun. Oh, man. It would be so dangerous in this job if I had disposable income. And I think about other people, you know, I know and work with and the stuff that they all buy. And I'm just like, man, I can't buy that. I got to buy diapers. I got to pay for daycare. Yeah, this job's all Skittles and beer. But the point is, that's a way to make up for it, right? Is you sell the phones you got and make that money back. And, well,
doing it Mickey's way is actually cheaper than opening up new lines and spending $299 for a razor.
Exactly.
That's right. Yeah, not to mention, okay, and you say, yeah, but you lose $100 on a phone. Yeah, but you're paying $30 to activate your new phone, so you're already 30% of the way there.
Right.
You know? Not to mention, when you buy and sell online, you're not paying tax.
Don't say that too loudly.
Okay. Sorry.
Somebody's going to hear you.
I always pay the tax at the end of the year.
No. I mean, somebody in D.C. is going to get a good idea that perhaps maybe you should up front.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for them to do that.
Exactly. Yeah. Anything else we want to talk about? The LG Viper hits on Sprint April 22nd. Pre-orders start today. That should be delivered by the 19th, by next Friday. Do you guys think the Galaxy Nexus is going to come out at the same time? We've seen a couple marketing materials that have said so, and I guess it makes sense.
Yeah. Maybe. I mean, it would make sense to launch kind of the LTE campaign right about the same time, right?
Is it wrong that I'm just kind of meh on the Galaxy Nexus on Sprint? I mean, it's still a fine phone. There's nothing wrong with it. The display is not as good as the 1X that we're getting on, you know, AT&T and Sprint. The camera, absolutely not as good. It's weird. I've seen people have been posting in the forums video reviews, and I'm not going to say which sites. I'm not going to call them out, but that have been calling the 1X camera mediocre. And we talked a little bit last week about how maybe it's not quite as good as HTC was making it out to be, but that's not surprising either. But it's absolutely better than the Galaxy Nexus camera. I don't think there's anybody out there who can honestly say
that. That doesn't take much. The Nexus One camera was better than the Galaxy Nexus camera.
I can't take a picture on this thing. No. You're right.
Yeah, I don't know. Terrible. Since I got 404, my pictures are looking a whole hell of a lot better on the Galaxy Nexus real.
Hmm.
Yep, it actually focuses now before it takes the shot.
Well, maybe we need to do some before and after.
How does it do? And my problem is, if the lighting is wrong at all, it's terrible.
That was always my problem. So, I mean, at this point, do we care about the Galaxy Nexus on Sprint? Should we let's go around the table and, you know, would you honestly recommend the Galaxy Nexus on Sprint, you know, in late April 2012? Knowing what we know with the Evo 4G LTE coming out.
No.
Yes. No.
I
Jerry.
Recommend. No. Hell no. Don't buy anything until you're buying a 3G device.
All right, we're gonna come back to Jerry when Skype quits screwing up on him. Maybe Mickey, you're a Sprint guy.
Wow. Yeah, the Skype call is really bad. Yeah.
Ustream is Ustream, I think.
Yeah, probably.
Because it's going through Skype as well. Either way. Okay, first of all, just as a weird aside, shouldn't they probably have skipped version 4.0.4, just 404, just like they should probably skip version 6.6.6, you know? Anyway. Honestly, I don't know. I'm not sure if I would not recommend it. And here's why. Today, You know what Android phone I recommend for Sprint users?
The Optimus S?
No. Nexus S4G.
Oh.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. Best Android phone on Sprint. Yep. Absolutely. Yep. And, yeah. And so I'm having a hard time recommending, you know, I mean, maybe you wait for the Evo 4G LTE, right? But I don't know. I mean, there's a certain segment that's still going to want that Nexus. And I still don't think it's, I'm not all that, you know, down on it. I still like it a lot. So I could still recommend it. Absolutely.
Corey?
I'd say I wouldn't be that excited about it this late in the year, but you know, if you like the form factor and you want that stock Android experience and the screen size, I mean, I know the 1X is similar, but I think it's a great phone. But it's getting kind of late in the game, and who knows with the battery life and all that on the LTE phone if it's going to be that great. So I don't know. I've had this for a few months, so I'm naturally bored because that's how I am.
All right, Jerry, you want to try again?
Okay. I'm going to have to say no, because right now at this point, anything you buy is essentially a 3G phone. And, you know, the Galaxy Nexus, you know, it's for me, it would be the only choice. But when Sprint kicks off that LTE network, we're going to see more phones. It's going to be more than just this Viper and the Evo. And, you know, if you're going to wait until May, I'm guessing May, you know, somewhere around there, maybe June when they release this thing, wait till August.
Yeah.
You know, and I usually never tell anybody to wait, but in this case, I think there's going to be a big push of LTE Android phones. So, you know, I have to just say, no, don't buy it yet.
I disagree with that, because I think that if Sprint was going to do a big push, it's going to be when the network first launches. And I think HTC is their biggest partner. They have been for quite a while. And so the Evo 4G is going to be the big one. I mean, what are you going to get? You're going to get the Nexus. That's going to be their Samsung model. Yeah, maybe they'll get the Galaxy S3, which who knows?
I wasn't going to say those words, but that is exactly what I was thinking.
Okay, but let's pull that out of the picture, because look at the Galaxy S, or the Nexus S versus the Galaxy S2. So, I mean, some people would argue that, what is it, the Epic 4G Touch is a better device than, you know, the Nexus S4G. I don't know if I could say that, though. I still think I would go with the Nexus. And this is where I'm kind of struggling is, so if we look at the third Galaxy, is that going to be better than the Nexus? And what does it mean to say it's better? You know,
it's a completely different thing
that I would want to fix would be the camera.
You're buying, you know, if you get a Galaxy Nexus, you're getting a completely different experience than if you buy an HTC phone or anything, really. I mean, that's what you're basing your decision on, is how you like the interface and the features that it provides.
You know, and here's another interesting thing, because I follow this stuff quite closely here, and there's going to be some changes here over the next couple of years with what Sprint is going to do with their networks and their spectrum and everything. And so we just actually heard today that they're going to be pushing out full implementation of their LTE on the 800 megahertz spectrum. And this is really good news, because of course this is as close to beachfront property that Sprint is going to get for their LTE network, as far as what's the best spectrum that they can possibly have. They're going to be sunsetting IDEN next year, where they're going to be cutting about 10,000 IDEN cell sites, which is about a third of their infrastructure. And that's going to mean that we are going to now see this push of LTE over to this 800 megahertz spectrum. Initially, they're going to be rolling it out on 1900. We're also going to see, of course, the partners that they're going to use. I think Clearwire is going to be the biggest beneficiary of this. And the bottom line is, we are going to, by the end of 2013, we're going to see a very nice, well-built network by Sprint on LTE. And we are probably talking, you know, a good 75% of the country is going to be covered with LTE by then. And it's just going to be a couple months after that where they start their transition to LTE Advanced. Sprint has totally changed their their direction here on how they were doing, you know, LTE. I know that we've got a question here coming up that talks about why they would want to switch from WiMAX over to LTE, but it's absolutely the right thing for them to do. And this is great news from what they said today, where they made a hard date. They said full implementation on 800 megahertz by 2014, which means that iDEN's gone then, which is great. Get rid of it. They don't need it. It's such valuable spectrum. It's unbelievable that they've spent this much time just futzing around with it. Do you know that they have gone from 20 million iDEN customers down to 6 million in a matter of like 6 years? I mean, they have just absolutely been obliterated when it comes to this Nextel buy was just the worst thing for them. So anyway, they need to recapture what they were looking, what they really wanted to do with this, what they really need to do with this, I think, and get everyone over to this. So I'm excited about this, what they've done.
Actually, Mickey, that's been a big question in the forums. And if you get bored, wander in there, because people have been asking about the 800 megahertz thing. And the other question is, are you going to be able to use this on any other LTE networks?
No. It's not going to. But that doesn't matter. I mean, well, I shouldn't say it doesn't matter. It sucks. It totally sucks for us, doesn't it? I mean, as consumers, you want to buy an LTE device and use it on any network. But the fact that there's 8 or 9 bands that are going to be available for use around the world. Actually, there's more than that. There's like 30 some combinations, but there's 8 or 9 main bands that are being used around the world. It just doesn't make sense that it's going to work, unfortunately.
So Mickey, that's even outside the US, right?
Yeah. I mean, so you've got 700, 800, 900, 1500, 1700, 1800, 1900, 2100 and 2500. So good luck.
So, you know, so the days of being able to go to Europe or, you know, whatever and use your phone.
See, you're still going to have a 3G fallback for a number of years. And, you know, that's going to be the saving grace for quite a while. But I wish Alex was on here because he's probably seen some of this a little bit more. I mean, they're talking about, you know, their testing is not on the same networks that we're rolling out. So, eventually the chipsets will be able to support it. We'll eventually be able to see multiple band roaming capabilities, but we are totally in the infancy of LTE still. I mean, we're talking like LTE is really what been around for 2 years, and it's awesome. I love it. I absolutely will always carry an LTE line with me, but you got to keep in mind that this is going to take a little bit of time to kind of get ramped up and for it to really work as the way that we want it to work. So it's just going to take some time. That's all there is to it.
One other question. I was actually working on a post on it and just haven't finished. Somebody asked in the forums, with only 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or whatever it's going to be, with only a handful of markets actually launching with Sprint LTE, is it worth buying an LTE phone right now? He's got an Evo 3D. So, you know, he's got WiMAX. Would you get off WiMAX and go to a newer phone with the prospect of getting LTE at some point, maybe, you know, in the next 8 months?
It depends where you are. Right. Is it even worth it to buy a 4G Sprint phone at all?
I mean, not here where I live.
No, it's not. I mean, I'm in Phoenix, the fifth largest city in the country, and there's 3 or 4 WiMAX towers. Seriously, three or four.
Well, I mean, he's got WiMAX now and is perfectly happy with it. So that, you know, there's the question: if you're perfectly happy with WiMAX, do you leave the data you know and love for a phone that you're going to know and love just as much, but with slower data? I don't know.
Are you in Atlanta, Baltimore, Houston, Dallas, Kansas City, or San Antonio? If so, sure. Right. If not, wait a little bit.
Yeah. Wonder if they'll do it. Are they still doing that whole $10 premium thing for 4G or for WiMAX?
Yep. They are.
No reason not. It's still 4G. I mean, it's still. Yeah. We're 2 years past that if you're not used to it by now. I don't know what to tell you. I do know what to tell you. It's time for a couple emails and voicemails. That's what I'm going to tell you. We're going to answer some more questions. And we're going to have fun with this, too, and you'll see why in a minute. So, let's. You want to do some emails first? Anybody? Yes? No?
Yeah. I want to start, if that's okay.
You're going to do the first one?
I'm going to do the first one, and it's actually Leo's.
Oh, okay. Read that one first, then.
Yeah. Yep, so we'll start with Leo, and he writes, why is it that Sprint felt the need to scratch their WiMAX network? We exist in a CDMA-GSM disparity right now. Does LTE have a technical advantage? Is it politics, or is it just the flat-out reason that Sprint doesn't want to be the only network in the world without LTE? Well, it does have a technical advantage in that it's a more efficient technology in that it's something that is going to be adopted worldwide. Now, which means there's going to be more support. That means there's going to be more development. That means there's going to be more everything that there is. It's a perfect, Blu-ray versus HD DVD or VHS versus Betamax comparison. And, you know, it makes sense for them to have switched over as well. Keep in mind, too, that the network that Sprint was operating their WiMAX network on was not theirs. It was Clear's. So Clearwire had developed it. They had implemented it. They were just basically wholesaling the network from them. There's about 10 million subscribers on Clear, about 9 million are actually Sprint customers. So when you look at what was going on with the WiMAX network, Sprint needed to figure something out. Yes, they can continue to wholesale their services from them, but it really for them long term, if they're going to be a viable player, they've got to have their own network. Sure, we can wholesale some of it out, especially when it comes to backfill and or infill and whatnot. But I'm really glad that they've decided to go this route. And it's also going to make for phones that are going to be more compatible with the Sprint network. Meanwhile, you may have different frequencies that are being used, but the fact that the manufacturers of the chipsets can do different things, with those and put in different antennas is going to make it, I think, for a better selection of phones that are going to come to Sprint. So that's probably where I think it is. It doesn't have to be they're the only network in the world without LTE. There's a lot of other reasons with that, and I do think it's a necessary switch.
What about Fat Phil? How do you feel about Fat Phil?
Fat Phil?
Huh?
Was that a backfill and infill?
Fat Phil. Hi.
Hi.
Fat Phil.
It's a lot funnier if you're watching this on video. Sorry. Huh. At the end of the day, you know, I just got an email saying I say at the end of the day too much, so I'm going to say it as much as possible the rest of this podcast. I mean like that. Jerry, I want you to take the first one from Joe.
Certainly. Click over here. All right. Joe writes, this is a question probably for Jerry. Well, thank you, Joe. Is anyone else experiencing lots of emulator bugs and problems with the latest R17 and R18 updates?
Yes.
I'm getting tons of force closes on my app and the emulators.
Me too.
If I close them out and restart, then they work fine for a while.
I hate that.
It is very frustrating because I have no idea if there's a problem with my code or not when it happens.
Tell me about it.
I've tried deleting them and making new ones. Heck, I can barely even get a 4.0-based emulator to work, and they will not load at all if I turn on the new GPU function.
There's a very simple fix to this. There's a very simple fix to this, actually. And the fact that...
What's your simple fix?
My very simple fix, and everybody should know this, not just Jerry. Not just Jerry, not just the neckbeard. And that's the R19 drop today, so you can go get that. God, everybody knows that. Gosh,
but yes.
All right, we're talking about the emulator, the Android emulator.
The 3D acceleration on the emulator, it was pretty rough.
I'm even going to drop a link in the chat. How about that? That's how much I know about this because I saw somebody share it on Google Plus today.
I know that I've got several different computers I can use here, and it's not a AMD versus NVIDIA versus Intel kind of thing. It sucks on all of them, and hopefully that's something they addressed with the new one. That I have downloaded the new one, I just haven't tried it yet.
Yeah, I don't think I got it yet. I think the shots I took the other day were still with the old one. On the other hand, maybe it went a little faster. You know, at the end of the day, though, it's really all about now. I'm going to drive some people nuts tonight. We're losing listeners. Sean writes, love the show. Keep up the great work. My question for anybody, not just Jerry, is I know the HTC One X Euro version has a Tegra 3 processor, but the AT&T version is coming with a Snapdragon S4 that is dual core. I know how you guys stand on benchmarks, but I've been reading that the Snapdragon's actually scoring higher than the Tegra 3. So is the Snapdragon a better processor, or will we never know the difference? Jerry and I have been talking this week about, well, I mean, first, I regret doing benchmarks on the 1X. I don't regret much of what I do.
I'll go on record saying I told you don't do it.
Yes, you did. The problem is like, oh man, people are excited about this phone, and at the end of the day, they want benchmarks. And at the end of the day, they want to know the difference. And at the end of the day, they want to know which one's better. See what I did there?
Mm-hmm.
We stopped doing benchmarks a long time ago, and we're about to stop doing them again because they really don't tell you anything. Yes, people have benchmarks. You want benchmarks? I have benchmarks. I've been benchmarking these things for weeks. You know, these aren't like special benchmarks that some sites have and some don't. You know, these are phones we've all had for weeks now. And looking at them, here's what we found. And Jerry and I have looked at the benchmarks, you know, on the 1S and the 1X. Some of them do better on some of the benchmark apps. Some of them do better on others. And at the end of the day, you know, what does it mean? And that's a big question. That's not a new question. And Jerry has explained this, you know, many times. But yeah, you can compare them back and forth. They don't tell you a damn thing. All it tells you is how they score on this app. Does it tell you which one's faster? Does it tell you which one has better battery life? I've been trying to find a better metaphor for this, and I was getting really close to doing jet engines. 747 has four engines. 777 has two. And on one hand, you're talking, you know, grossly different, you know, designs and planes and weights and loads and all this stuff. And maybe, you know, maybe that's not so different with phones. I need to think about that a little more. You know, the 1X has more pixels to push. And it has, well, more pixels to push. And maybe that's the biggest difference.
Well, that's a benchmark for me. It's the benchmark doesn't come in some app. How does it feel when you're scrolling?
Exactly. So when you see these 1S versus 1X benchmarks, all that shows you is that somebody was smart enough to run these apps, take pictures, and put them on a web page. And I was dumb enough to do it for the 1X, and I apologize. I shouldn't have done it. I went against, you know, the policy that we set a long time ago that we talked ourselves into, and we need to go back to not doing them. We're going to give up page views. I'm saying that right now. We're giving up page views that everybody else is getting by confusing you, and that's it. I'm getting upset about
Phil,
benchmarks.
Thank you.
It's
your
ridiculous.
Integrity just shines through.
Well,
I'm glad to know you.
My wine glass is empty, so that's part of it. But
want some champagne?
Benchmark. I get why benchmarks are fun.
Benchmarks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get why they're fun.
It's fun to do them.
I've done benchmarks with former Samsung engineers in a bar in New York. And they said, ooh, how does this... It was... We were there for the original Galaxy S event. I know I've talked about this before. And it was the week after the Droid X was released. I guess we got a review unit. So I'm in this bar in New York with Omar Khan, among others, you know, engineers for Samsung at the time. And we're running benchmark tests against the, you know, Motorola 1X or Motorola Droid X. And, you know, it was a cool thing to do. It was like, damn, we're here with, you know, engineers running benchmarks because it sounds important. But when you stop and think, it's like, damn, they took that seriously too? And maybe they can understand them and appreciate them a little differently than I can. But, I mean, now seeing all these posts go up that, hey, we have your benchmarks to compare this to this, and let's see how they do, and we have to do them. No, you don't. No, you don't. You're doing everybody a disservice by doing it. And we're not going to do it anymore. We're giving up page views to everybody else, and that's fine. Because that's what makes us a better site. At the end of the day.
Now, to answer that question real quick.
Yes.
And a big reason of why I hate the benchmarks so much. Some of the benchmarks are better on one device. Some of the other benchmarks are better on the other device. We've seen that before. I mean, some of these benchmarks apps are even sponsored by the people that are making the processors.
Yes.
It is a big crock of crap. The HTC, and we'll use them as an example, they have people that work there that are a whole lot smarter than any of us that are software engineers and hardware engineers, and they all work together to design an HTC 1X that regardless of the hardware inside is going to perform the same. The end user is not going to see any difference unless they go looking for it and trying to convince themselves they see it.
I get that people want something tangible to see. I get that you guys want some way to say, here's how fast my phone is. You want a quantifiable number, and that's what these tests give you. They give you a nice, big, round, sexy number that says, here's what your phone scores. It doesn't say how fast your phone is. It doesn't give throughput. You know, there's another sexy word. And I'm not sure that you're going to get it.
All these benchmarks. You can't benchmark an Android phone running through the Dalvik interpreter. I don't care. You know, you take that somewhere else because all you're doing is benchmarking how well you can run the Dalvik interpreter.
Yeah, so the point is we're done doing them.
I've shown you can manipulate the daylights out of that. Mm-hmm. And if some dummy like me can do it, you know, I don't trust them.
Uh-oh.
Well, in the Galaxy Nexus, by all measurements, was supposed to be a really good performing phone. You know, it has ICS and fastest processor and all that. To me, it's slower than a lot of phones I've used. So, like, it starts lagging when I use the keyboard if I start typing too much, it starts lagging really bad. So I don't think you can look at these benchmarks and make decisions on whether a phone's going to perform well or not.
You really should.
You really have to use it.
Absolutely. You really shouldn't. So we're going to stop doing them. If you want benchmarks, go read the other sites that don't know any better. See what I did there?
Whew. I saw it.
We got any emails left. Rodriguez writes, I haven't heard anything about either the HDMI output or FM radio in the new Evo 4G LTE. Is it going to be the same non-powered MHL adapter as the Evo 3D? And is the FM radio app there? I couldn't tell in the video. Yes, they're both there. So you've got to have an MHL adapter, which I get people use and enjoy, and that's fine. I find having to plug in one cord into another cord to do something just utterly ridiculous, so I'm not going to do it, but that's how you're going to do it. And yes, it has the FM radio. I was actually going to do a post on what's on the Evo 4G LTE, because I've got, you know, pictures of everything that was in the app drawer, but it's almost like it was missing stuff. It's almost like some of the stock Sprint apps you expect to see. I can't remember Sprint TV, but like NASCAR stuff and things like that. It kind of felt like things were missing, so I've held off on that till now because maybe that wasn't like final software. And if you remember, go back and it actually said protected under the Android version. So, I mean, obviously we weren't dealing with, you know, final software, and that's not new. But yes, the FM radio app was on there. Which is good to know.
Have you guys done a late night poll on FM radio? People use it or not?
We should.
We will tonight.
I've always been curious about that.
Let's do it. Corey apparently wasn't around during the Nexus One days.
Well, you know.
In FM radio.
Yeah, it's something that I don't use it, and I know a lot of people that don't use it, and I just don't think we understand why other people want it so bad. But we'll find out tonight.
Cool. When somebody doesn't, or when people don't have something on their phone, they try really hard to get it. I remember the HDMI thing on the Evo. That was a lot of work developers put into making that work out.
Yeah. All right, so that's it for emails. Let's do a couple of voicemails and we'll get out of here. Renee, you ready? You want to do, pick whichever one you want to do first.
Hello, this is Harry. I'm from Illinois. Great job, guys. Love the show. Listen to it every week and watch it too. My question is about the Galaxy Note. I have one. I absolutely love it. I think it's the best phone I've ever owned, with one exception. This thing is the biggest RAM hog in the world. My Skyrocket always had 300 to 400 megs of RAM available for me to use in memory. The Galaxy Note, if I'm lucky, has 60 megabytes on a good day. I had the exact same apps running on the Note that I had running on the Skyrocket. And yet, out of a gigabyte of RAM, I have 60 megs of RAM. So what's going on? Is my phone defective, or is this something that plagues all the Galaxy Note? Thanks again. I appreciate your answer. And Jerry, love the beard.
Anybody?
Well, that means that the Galaxy Note's doing a better job as the way it's designed than the other one was. Free RAM is useless. It means it's not being used. You're just powering it for nothing, wasting battery, having it sit there and do nothing.
Yep.
But more than likely, the bigger screen requires a bigger chunk to be allocated at boot.
You know, it's running out of RAM. What other phone did
he say he was?
Skyrocket.
Skyrocket.
Yeah, the resolution difference is huge, right. And you're going to need to hold back a little bit more RAM, you know, just for screen redraws and stuff. So that's going to be a big part of it. But you know, really, in an ideal world, your launcher wouldn't need to swap, and you'd have zero free RAM on an Android phone.
I wouldn't worry about it. I mean, if you see your phone slowing down, that's one thing. But I don't. And I think a lot of it's going to be in your head. And I don't say that to like sound mean.
Could be.
I just think when you're paying attention to that sort of thing a lot more, you're going to start seeing stuff.
Send us some managing benchmarks. Memory.
No, Corey.
Memory is just bothers me. Bothers me to manage memory because I do it too, and it makes me. It's all drives me nuts because I just sit there and watch it.
I think I'm old and lazy and have better things to do now. I mean, back in the Winmo days, we had to, right? Android, especially now in Android, and I get that like 2 years ago was a totally different thing. But, you know, hardware has come so far. If you're on a newer phone, it's really not something you should worry about. Try to force yourself. Honestly, try to force yourself to not worry about that. Don't worry about how many apps you have open, what might be running in the background. Really, I mean, give yourself not just a day either. Force yourself to do it for a week. I had to quit biting my nails for this job, right? Same sort of thing. It was one of the toughest things. And I get how tough it can be to not obsess about that. I really do understand. But, you know, give yourself a week of not worrying about it. You're going to enjoy the phone a lot more. You really, really are.
Sounds like another good poll.
Sounds like I need to go on Zen and Tech. Phil's office space moment. All right, let's do the other voicemail, and then we're out of here.
Hi, this is Jim from Jersey, calling for the Android Central podcast. My question is, I know the new HTC Evo comes with a non-removable battery. That kind of scares me. I definitely have battery pulls have saved me in the past. I run a rooted device, custom ROMs. No, you usually don't go into too much of that stuff, but the question's for Jerry. Is there really anything to worry about with not being able to do a battery pull? Hopefully you guys can give me a simple kind of couple pointers to watch out for. That way I don't get into a bad situation. Thank you. Big fans.
Another question for Jerry.
I hear you. Yeah. See? I love all you guys too. It's never been an issue on any of the tablets I've used. There's always just hold the power button down and it'll... I think on Samsung, if you've got the power button down more than 8 seconds, it automatically reboots. It's just like a battery pull. It you know, kills the circuit and restarts. Does that mean there won't be a case where you run into that, you know, you need to kill all the battery power and you can't do it? No, I mean, it's possible. But for those few and far between cases, leave it turned on, set it on the couch, go have a drink, come back, the battery will be dead.
True.
Plug it in and restart it.
It's another one of those questions we've gotten a lot in the forums to the point where somebody said, oh, I bet there's a reset button on it. And so somebody started that rumor. Thanks, guys. There is, as far as I can tell, and I absolutely know there's not one on the 1X. And, you know, opening up the back of the 1S, I certainly don't see anything. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be, you know, power button / volume button based, whatever it is. But I can't speak to, you know, running ROMs and hacking on these things because, you know, things happen. I get that. But in 3 weeks, put it this way, and this is what they're asking about. Well, what if something happens? What if I need to, you know, shut it off? What if an app freezes and it just the whole thing goes to hell? I've been using this for 3 weeks now and on not janky hardware or software, but early software, you know, software that was unfinished that actually had some pretty decent bugs in it. And I have not once had that problem. Not once. So... I mean, it won't happen.
No, I've never had to do that since I've owned an Android phone since the original Droid. I've never had to do a battery because of an app.
No,
because of locked up. Have you guys?
No.
Yeah. Well, I've had to do it, and it was my own damn fault. But, you know, not through normal use of the phone, no.
Sure. You know, the one thing I have that I have to do that on is the Google I.O. version of the Galaxy Tab 10.1. I think crashes all the time still.
Power button, yeah.
So that's it, boys and girls. That is a podcast. That is how you do a podcast. I believe we set the gold standard for how to do a podcast. Because at the end of the day, no, I'm sorry. I already got a nasty gram from that guy. Why are you being so mean? Just giving you a hard time. If you tell me not to do something, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it a lot more. So, just saying. But I love you all. I do. It's good to be back. It's good to have everybody back here. We miss Alex. Mickey, take us home.
If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can send us email to podcast@androidcentral.com or leave us a voicemail at 888-468-6158. Type in extension 222 when you're prompted. If you'd like to follow all of us, you can follow the site at Android Central. Phil is at Phil Nickinson. I am at TCPJ_Mickey. Jerry is at GB Hill. Corey is at C Streeter. And Alex is at Alex Dobie. You can also follow all of the writers over at Android Central. This show and the entire site brought to you by the Android Central store, found at shopandroid.com. You can also place your order by calling 888-468-6158.
That's it. We're done. Quick note, no podcast next week on the 19th. No podcast on the 19th or that week, actually, because I am out of town and unreachable. I can't tell you where I'll be. Can't tell you what I'm doing, because frankly, I have no idea. I just know I won't be here. I won't be available. So we'll catch up in 2 weeks. Until then, Jerry, Corey, Mickey, good to see you guys.
Nice to see you, Phil.
Bye-bye.